When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
In sports, if you want to be the best, there are no off days.
Welcome on into the No Off Days podcast. I believe we've started. Have we started yet? I can't see anything. I've been wearing these glasses all week, and I'm waiting for the eclipse to finally be over so we could finally take off. All right. Is it all clear yet?
I thought you had looked at the eclipse without glasses and burned your retinas, and those are what you're wearing now.
I'm trying to think of other uses for these eclipse glasses, and I'm thinking, you know, you could probably use these like in a meeting setting where you want to doze off a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because those allow no light in, right?
It'll black it out. Your wife is telling you to do something, and you just kind of sleeping on the couch. Yes, honey.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Or you could just save them for the next eclipse in 21 years.
2045, yeah. And we are in the path of totality, my friend.
That's what they tell us.
Yeah. Are you going to Airbnb your place? I've already listed mine.
Will we even be living here then?
Yeah, like, won't we be living.
We'll be on Mars then. Yeah. You know, Mars has two moons. So think about that.
Oh.
Double solar eclipse.
Okay, nice. What would it be like if you were on the moon during an eclipse? Would you be able to tell? Would it be any different?
I guess we would be between Earth and the sun. So I guess we wouldn't really notice anything.
You wouldn't
benefit.
Even know.
No. Now, when Earth gets between us and the sun, then we would be in shadow, and we would call that an eclipse.
Okay. Nice.
It's all about perspective, I guess.
Yeah, maybe we'll be there one day. Well, welcome into the No Off Days podcast. I forgot introductions. This would be Chris.
I'm Chris.
And then Brian's in the booth, and my name's Scott. And this week on the show, this is our championship week. We will unveil the winner of the cake bracket.
Yes.
I mean, we've been going a month strong, right? It
feels like 2 months.
Yeah. A lot of discussion about cake, a lot of consumption of cake, and here we go. We actually have a special guest today on the show. Yes.
Is it edible?
Yeah, yeah. It's our winner. Our winner will be consumed here by the end of this show. So that's why I have my bib standing by and I'm ready to go. So looking forward to that. Of course, it was championship week on the hoop side of things. So we'll get into that momentarily. Let's bring in Brian King. BK, I know you you love astronomy and astrology and NASA and everything that has to do with the eclipses. You even drive a Mitsubishi Eclipse, from what I understand. What did you think about the big festivity?
The eclipses are okay. It was kind of a bunch of hype, you know, here in Tampa. Now, if you were there, I mean, we had some people here from work. I think Stephanie and Larry went to see it in Ohio. So, to see an actual full one, how cool would that be?
Yeah.
So,
I guess
21 years.
I guess I think it was overrated is a good way to put it. I mean, I went out in the backyard, I popped these guys on, I looked, I said, "Hey, how about that?"
It's
and
impressive.
I took them off and I went back in the house and I was like, okay.
I'm hungry for crescent rolls now.
Back to what I was doing.
I agree with Brian, though. I think if we were in the path of totality and it's pitch black in the middle of the afternoon, I think that'd be different.
Is it totally
That's what it was.
Pitch black?
Yeah, for all the people that we were watching, you know, in other parts of the country, it was pitch black.
I've been in one in high school. We had, I think, like 98%, and this was when I lived in Greenville, Cato, and it was pretty dark, but it never got like nighttime dark. I thought you see stars.
You gotta
and
have
stuff.
Totality for nighttime dark.
See, that's what I'm hearing.
Even if 5% of the sun's getting through, it still does a pretty good job.
It does, yeah.
I guess the only point of intrigue for me would be to see like how animals react and stuff. I heard that like you know they get crazy. Dogs start barking. Werewolves come out.
Alligators start
monsters.
Walking on their hind legs.
Yeah. Dead people rise out of the grave. Is that right?
I hope that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, very good. What do we have on today's show, BK?
You kind of hinted at it first. We're going to have the big cake reveal, the championship cake, whatever it was, voting hot and heavy all week.
What were our finalists? Remind everyone.
It was chocolate cake, number one seed, number one overall seed, going up against number three cheesecake.
That's it.
A lot of dispute with the cheesecake, a lot of controversy surrounding that entry.
Yeah.
But we'll see if it pulled through. And then it's Masters Week. So,
yes, it is.
Yeah. So why don't we make our Masters picks? not a master's bracket. Let's don't do that again, but let's make some picks.
Yeah. Let's not do that again.
Yeah. Yeah. By the way, everybody around here is like, okay, what is the next bracket you're going to do? Right. You're like, I don't know, but it's not going to be for another year.
A lot of pressure.
Like, we're not going to become the bracket show, are we?
No. I've heard a lot of suggestions, and I don't really like any of them, but yeah. Okay.
Who gave you the worst?
Probably the person. A lot of people have wanted to do pizza toppings, and I just don't know how that doesn't wind up being pepperoni.
It's
and
just pepperoni.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. That's not a good one. Yeah. Someone wanted like salty snacks, the salty snacks bracket.
Okay. Interesting.
I mean,
there
are so many kinds of potato chips, though.
Potato chips, tortilla chips. I mean, chips in general. I mean,
nuts, crackers. Are salty. Nuts are good.
Yeah.
Actually, that might not be a bad idea.
Nuts?
If anyone could see it,
I just don't think you're going to stir up the passion in the fan base like that you really get with things that are as divisive as favorite cakes.
Yeah.
So, okay. Very good, BK. We'll catch up with you momentarily.
Cool.
To get your master's picks. Start studying now. If you're listening and you want to watch, go to fox13news.com/nodpod. If you're watching and you want to listen or subscribe, take out your phone, zap the QR code on the screen, and there you can find all of our shows, all the ones going into great detail about cake, and you can watch Chris eat it, and you can watch Haley smash one into my face. It's been a month of nothing but cake. Fox13news.com/nodpod. So this, of course, dovetails off of what is the real championship, and that would be the National Basketball Championship. The men's final went down on Monday night, and I guess it just kind of went down as everybody suspected. As we had seen play out throughout the course of this thing, I mean, UConn dominating Purdue. There wasn't, I mean, outside of Edie, there really wasn't much that they could do. They kind of eliminated perimeter scoring, and UConn is just so good, and they hit you in a different facet of ways. Obviously, they play great defense. Like, you can't pin one scorer down. I mean, they had, four guys in double digits.
Yeah.
So just dominant, and I'm looking at, like, these six games in the tournament, their average margin was 23 points. So 140 combined points, Chris, they won those six games by. It's the most ever, most dominant title winner ever. The previous one was North Carolina back in 2009, which was 125 points. So 140 combined points. They blew out everybody.
Yeah.
I mean, you could have literally, I mean, for as much as we love the bracket and the tournament for all the upsets, we got very little of that.
Right. It's true.
Which does that make it kind of a little bit of a dud?
It was a little bit of a dud. Anytime you have a team
just as a fan,
is that dominant? I mean, and you can go beyond that. Go back to last year's NCAA tournament. They didn't lose any of those games and won at least by 13 points. I mean, a 2-year run. And the incredible thing is, this is a different UConn team than they had last year.
Yep.
The big guy, Donovan Klingon, he was a role player last year that came off the bench. Other than that, you've got transfers in from places like Rutgers and Loyola. And, you know, this is what's possible now in the portal era. When you have a good system, you bring these guys in, and you can win back-to-back for the first time since the Florida Gators did it back in 2006, 2007.
UConn lost five of its top eight scorers from the prior year's team. Yeah. I mean, exceptional. It's really a tip of the cap to what Dan Hurley did, the culture he has created. And, you know, those guys that did stick around, the belief that they could do it again. And, you know, I don't know, because when you replace that much talent, I think it's hard to believe that you can get back. It's so difficult to run that kind of to run the table as they did, and yet they did it with so many new characters in place. It's remarkable. I mean, it almost goes down as maybe the most impressive back-to-back all time. I mean, you have Billy Donovan's Gator team. What, North Carolina, were they in there too? Did they win back-to-backs?
Duke did in like 91, 92, I think. But yeah, it doesn't happen often, and I think that's because it is the hardest tournament in the major sports to win, because if you lay one egg, you're out. But UConn didn't even come close to doing that. I think Alabama gave them the toughest game in the Sweet 16 just because it was a different style.
Of course you'd mention that.
Well, no, I think it was. I mean, you know, playing a – but you hold – so Bama usually shoots 33s a game, 33-pointers a game. They held Bama to 23 attempts. They held Purdue, who has one of the best three-point shooting averages in the nation, to seven three-point attempts. That just speaks to how their defense never stops.
Yeah.
They just roll guys off the bench and – run guys off the three-point line. They're not given any open looks. Very impressive.
Yeah, I mean, and even for the big 7'4" monster in the middle there for Purdue, I mean, he had what, like 37 points.
37.
He was a big factor in the first half. He had 20 plus points in the first half, but then it was irrelevant. I mean, nobody else could do anything. So it's like if you alone can't beat this team, but UConn, a true team, the Huskies winning the national championship in back to back years, and the question then quickly came about is. What's it going to be the future for Hurley? Is he going to bounce? Is he going to leave? There's going to be offers. There's one job in particular that has opened up, and at this point has not yet been filled. And you know he kind of extinguished a lot of that stuff on the court after the win, saying, "Look, they have taken care of us very well here at UConn." I mean, he gets a $1.8 million bonus. For winning the national championship.
He should.
That's a healthy little bump. But he recently, you know, last, I think it was June, signed a 6-year, $32 million deal. But he said basically if we went anywhere, like my wife would probably divorce me because she's a New Jersey girl.
She doesn't want to get far away from the Garden State.
Right. Yeah. So he kind of laughed it off, but I don't know. What do you think?
He didn't completely. I will say he could have been more emphatic, right? About
so
saying,
you're not totally buying it.
Not completely buying
okay.
it.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
I just, you know, Kentucky's got all the resources in the world, deep, deep pockets. I mean, I think they're going to try to make him an offer he can't refuse.
As they should.
Yeah, they should. I don't know. It comes down to. Yes, you could keep doing this at UConn, but also if you look at the arms race that's major college sports now, Kentucky has an SEC football program that's bringing in $30, $40 million in revenue that UConn's athletic department doesn't have.
Yeah.
So, you know, facilities-wise, they're always going to be behind, and he's always going to have to be leaning on his boosters to try to make up for that gap, and that gap's just going to keep growing. So he could have he could take care of his staff. He could take care of his NIL much better at a place like Kentucky. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's obviously the big news was that John Calipari was, I guess, mutual parting of ways. I think it was kind of one of those things that worked for both sides. I mean, he had a lifetime contract. Did you realize that?
Yeah, I think
Calipari had a lifetime contract, $8.5 million a year. And so he takes the Arkansas job. And, you know, they've kind of made it seem like, okay, well, the big reason is because look at all the NIL money that, like, Arkansas is pouring a ton of money, like $5, $6 million is their starting bankroll for their NIL. So he's going to have a lot of money to play with there with getting in players. And, you know, that they've been a prominent program in years past. I mean, they've
oh, sure. You had the Nolan Richardson teams back in the day.
I mean, it's not Kentucky.
No.
But
you've got the resources. You've got Tyson money coming in. You know, you've got the Walmart money. Jerry Jones is always a phone call away. So I do wonder, though, what was he not getting at Kentucky? I mean, he's got blue chippers every year. What more can you get at Arkansas that you weren't getting at Kentucky in basketball?
That's precisely it. Like, and so you look at the talent. I mean, he's getting these guys in every year. He has top recruiting classes. Tons of talent. He's never been a lack for talent on any of his teams. Go back to Memphis, and you know he's always been an exceptional recruiter. He knows kind of the shaking hands, kissing babies angle of what it is in college sports now, and yet he has won one NCAA tournament game, Coach Cal, since 2019. I mean, when you're getting bumped by St. Peter's and by Oakland, that is not good. And yet he's a great coach.
Yeah,
I mean, so what is it? What is that missing ingredient that a guy like Dan Hurley has developed there at UConn? I mean, everybody's got access to the transfer portal. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can't imagine that Kentucky doesn't have the NIL money to flaunt and get any of those guys from UConn. So, like, what is it? Is it a culture thing?
Yeah.
Is it a buy-in thing? Like, what is it that Hurley's developing? Is it just simply X's and O's coaching? I mean, is he taking the talent he has and extracting every last bit of talent out of them where maybe Coach Cal leaves some on the floor? I mean, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that, but I do know that he's always been big on, hey, we're going to get you here, and then we're going to get you onto the NBA.
Yeah, look at the NBA
so
rosters.
So it's like we are just a pass-through, and and I don't know. Maybe that's not the same message at UConn, and maybe that matters. Maybe the messaging is, no, hey, we want to win championships. We want to win back-to-back. We want to keep it going. And if Coach Cal's like, hey, we're just a stop. We'll do what we can in the 1 year, 2 years that you're here, and then you're off, and you're going to make a ton of money in the NBA. But now guys are making a ton of money in college. So, like – there is something missing there. But what wasn't missing was that video that emerged earlier this week when Coach Cal was. Did you see this when he was walking his dog?
Or pushing his dog?
No, this is the weird thing. He's pushing a stroller, but there's. Unless there was another dog in the stroller.
Well, there was a dog in the stroller earlier, but I think the dog that we see later had gotten out of the stroller. Okay. Which means it really didn't
just
need the stroller.
Like, why? Like, is there like somebody else that could walk the dog? If the dog needs to get out that day, are you going to do it on the day that the big news breaks? Like, it's just so bizarre.
Maybe this is his thing, where this is his moment of zen, pushing his dog stroller. And you know, of course the media is going to be there in your neighborhood, but.
I loved just the moment of panic. When he realized there's a camera across the street, he starts reaching for his phone. Yeah, he doesn't know what to do with it. He's got a dog, like, pulled in one hand. He's got a stroller in the other. He's like, there's nothing I can do.
He's got to know this is coming, though.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. But, by the way, I don't know if you picked up on this, but I think his dog's name is Paul.
Oh, no, I didn't pick up on that.
He's like, come on, Paul. Is like that not the weirdest dog name ever?
Has he had any player, Paul George? No. Did he play? No. Maybe it was a Pau Gasol. I don't know. That's interesting.
I mean, maybe my ears deceive me, but I thought I heard him call his dog Paul.
Maybe it's Polly.
And that's not going to fly in Arkansas. Well, Fayetteville, you ain't naming your dog Paul.
You're not pushing it in a stroller either.
No, you can't do that.
Your dog probably doesn't have a leash. Like, it's just already trained to run off. It would run off the media in Arkansas. Your dog would be going after.
Well, you know what? He's going to find success there with the Hogs. I'm sure of it. They're going to be fine.
Yeah, I think he will. You know, I've heard people say he's kind of washed and like he doesn't. But I think he's going to be chip on shoulder guy now. He's going to be out there proving.
Yeah. Something to prove, and he's going to be able to – look, he's going to pull in a lot of these guys. I mean, Kentucky's probably going to lose a lot of – I mean, there's one here in Tampa in particular, in Carter Knox, that he has decommitted from Kentucky. And who's to say he doesn't end up at Arkansas?
Yeah.
Who's to say he doesn't end up at USF either, because that was second on his list. But, so there's – he's a talented coach. They're going to be great. Sometimes it's just like fresh blood, fresh scenery. And then I'm sure Kentucky's going to be fine, whoever they end up getting, if that's Hurley or anybody else. But congrats to the UConn Huskies, back-to-back national champs. Coming up on the other side, we're going to dive into a little bit of baseball. We're a couple weeks now into the season, and there's one theme that has emerged, one that Justin Verlander has referred to as a pandemic. That is next on the No Off Days podcast. Welcome back to the No Off Days podcast. Baseball season underway. Rays kind of underperforming as we sit here. I mean, based on last year's results, obviously, they hadn't lost a game yet at this point.
They were shot out of a cannon last year at this point. But schedule's been harder, right?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Is that it? I feel like there's definitely some hiccups. I mean, there's some pitching bumps that they're going through right now, just trying to figure everything out. But, look. Long season.
It is.
Long season. Yeah. Do we need to remind you of this? So that's the situation for the Rays, and it'll be nice once they can get some pitching help back. And some of that is expected this year. But it has been a situation all throughout Major League Baseball. It's the big story and really kind of has bubbled up this week in all the elbow injuries that we've seen, the Tommy Johns, the UCL. Like, this year, it has just reached this peak. And there was an ESPN report that said there are 60 elbow-related injuries in Major League Baseball already this season. Now, that doesn't mean they're all Tommy John or they're all needing, you know, a trip to the IR. But that is how many elbow-related injuries that we've seen already this season.
And we're 2 weeks in?
Yeah. And there are huge names, right? And some of these go back to last year, names like Otani and, you know, locally, Shane McClanahan, Jacob DeGrom, Walker Buehler, Felix Bautista, Robbie Ray, Framber Valdez from the Astros had a little elbow discomfort the other day. And so it has kind of kicked off this a little bit of a spat, a little feud between Major League Baseball and Major League Baseball Players Association, where the Players Association is saying, yeah, there is a problem. And part of that problem is this pitch clock. That's leading to it. And, you know, the MLB is trying to force these new rules, and they're not looking at the health of players as their primary concern. They're looking at the comfort of fans or whatever it is to watch a fast baseball game. And left behind in this is the health of the players. MLB shoots back and says, actually, you have no evidence of that.
No data to support that.
You can't prove that, and I don't know. I don't know if they're working on that. But I don't think that that's it. That could be a factor. It could be a factor, but there are some obvious factors as to why this is happening. And, you know, a lot of the big-name pitchers in the game of baseball nowadays, Justin Verlander, Gerrit Cole, they have spoken out this week, and I think they have given some kind of insightful commentary into what is going on with all these elbow injuries. And, you know, I think it comes down to velocity. I mean, that's really what's going on. It's the velocity on these pitches that, you know, to be able to hang in today's game, you need max velo, you need, you know, spin rate that's off the charts, like all these things that are putting so much more pressure on these pitchers' arms that even like the Tommy John surgeries that they have now, like the shelf life on these things is only like 3 to 5 years. Like, it's surprisingly ineffective. It used to be great. It used to be like, you have Tommy John, you're good.
Your,
like,
elbow's going to be even stronger when
even
you come back.
Stronger. Yeah. It's not the case anymore. So it's like, where do we go from here? How do we fix it? You know, Verlander referred to it as a pandemic. I don't know. Is that a little – is he overreaching? Did he grab the wrong word there? Or do you agree with him?
Will they start offering people shots in their elbow? I hope not.
They're getting something in their elbow.
Well, yeah. I liked, you know, I found his interview very insightful. And I also thought it was odd that first place I saw it was posted on MLB.com. Mm. But, yeah, I hadn't really thought about that. The way that it's emphasized now, he's talking about the lost art of pitching versus throwing hard, velocity and cutting it, and how kind of the analytics you mentioned earlier played into that, where teams aren't incentivized anymore to take a pitcher deep into a lineup.
You're out third time through.
You're out third time through. So they want you to bring the heat.
Yep.
And, you know, he mentioned, too, the fact that the baseball itself changed back in 2016. Guys that didn't hit home runs often started hitting out of the park, mm-hmm. opposite field. And so he said personally he changed his approach to more of, I'm not going to try to place the ball and get weak contact anymore. I can't afford to give up contact. I'm just going to have to make guys swing and miss. So you're talking about more velocity. And, you know, the human arm, I guess, is not made to throw upper 90s all the time and put cut on it. It's just – and so his point was, we need to rethink the way we teach pitching, the way we incentivize teams to pitch. Like, go back 10, 20 years ago, you want a guy that could go 7 innings, 8 innings deeper into lineup. He's not throwing upper 90s all the time. He's, you know, he's throwing some breaking stuff. He's mixing in pitches, and there's not as much pressure on those sensitive joints and all that tissue in there.
Yeah, he mentioned that, like, you don't see pitchers nowadays that are, like, pitch to contact. You know, like, that was, you know, throw into spots, you know, throw low and away. And you know, if a dead ball hitter is going to hit weak contact, like, pitchers don't look for that. It's all swing and miss stuff now because the hitters are that much better. The ball flies that much further. I heard this interview of a surgeon that has done these. He may be one of the preeminent surgeons in Major League Baseball when it comes to Tommy John's. And he says that he can almost, it's at the point now where he can almost tell what kind of pitch this pitcher throws by the way the ligament is torn.
Whoa.
So, like, if he's a slider, sweeper, like, you know, cutters, like, he can almost tell now. So it's crazy. The real impact, though, I think, is how it trickles down. And Verlander spoke to this point, is that it's the game at the top changes the game down below. Everybody, if you want to get to Major League Baseball, you're going to have to start employing things in lower levels to get there. I mean, my boy plays, he's a 10-year-old, and he plays Little League. And I think that there are even things that I see here and there. Obviously, it's not nearly as extreme, but there are things there that are very prevalent in terms of pitching coaches. And, you know, they try to do a good job of pitch count and all that kind of stuff. But stuff that, like, when I played Little League, like, this was not a thing. You know, it was not a thing. And so, but you are concerned with, like, high schoolers that are now going to have their first Tommy John. It's more affected in the college game too. So there's a trickle down of this, and it's like, how do you get this toothpaste back in the tube? And I don't think anybody has an answer. I mean, that's even Garrett Cole was saying that you have to meet the demands. Like, and that's part of the issue. It's like, we can't sit here and be like, okay, you can throw 100 miles an hour, but, you know, for the long-term health of your arm, you know,
we don't
want you
to. Keep it in the low 90s. Yeah, no. Because then some young guy's going to come along and take your job anyway.
Right. Yeah. And you're always 1 year away from, you know, money that could, you know, protect you for life generational money. So, I mean, there's so many demands on the athlete that it's like, what can you do? Is it an equipment issue? Is it like a, like, can you do something to the mound, something to the baseball, you know, that would limit, you know, the amount of damage? It's much like in the NFL, it's like you have this issue of concussions, right? Like, you can't really slow people down, but you can penalize certain hits, like the hip drop.
Oh, yes.
Your favorite.
Let's not
that you can like disincentivize portions of the game with rules, and then you could also change equipment, you know, like the helmets and all that. That is, you know, it's fantastic. A lot of these things are I think, helping people prevent concussions and subconcussive hits. But, like, in baseball, is there an answer to that? Like, if you had a lighter baseball, a heavier baseball, if it was made of something different, if the pitch on the, you know, if the mound wasn't as high, or if it was, you know, all these things. I don't know.
What do you think about Verlander's suggestion of, he said he and Max Scherzer were talking about this, incentivizing a team to pitch a pitcher deeper into a game by taking away the DH if they don't meet their certain, like, if this pitcher doesn't pitch through three batters, then you, the pitcher's team, loses your DH for the rest of the game.
It's an interesting concept. I mean, the problem is that, like, who is going to carry that mantle forward? Like, who is going to, like, it doesn't really benefit teams.
But if it's
as a whole,
if it's a labor issue, like if MLBPA is behind it,
but everything is going to be a discussion. It's not just like, let's force it through. Like, the people that want that are guys like Verlander and Scherzer, guys that are going to be long starters, you know. But in today's game, I mean, look at, like, the Rays, like, lineup of pitchers.
Oh, you get a new pitcher every 2 innings.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, they invented the bullpen, you know, the bullpen days.
Right.
You know, like, so. And it doesn't necessarily benefit teams either, like, to have your pitcher go deeper into games. I mean, if they're doing great, yes. But I don't know. It's just like, who's going to carry – I think it's a novel idea. I just don't know who's going to carry that forward. But, I mean, again, there's a lot of smart people in baseball, a lot of people that care deeply about it, guys like Justin Verlander. They're probably going to be the guys that have to come up with the solution at some point.
Sounds like it.
Because they're the ones that have to move the game forward. But, yeah, it is a problem, you know.
One way to fix it is teach everyone to pitch with both arms. Then you can maximize. You see this pitcher from Mississippi State. He throws upper 90s right hand, upper 90s left hand.
Yeah, I believe they call that amphibious.
Yes, they do, yeah. So he's going to be able to prolong that, you know, the life of each arm.
Yeah, well, that's not a bad idea. The problem is, in today's game, they would be like, okay, if you're good enough, then you're going to pitch every 2 days.
Yeah, that's right.
Like, we'll just...
You're going to relieve yourself. You're going to come back in for yourself.
Don't relieve yourself like that. Yeah. But, okay. Very good.
I can see through your uniform.
I think we solved the issues. Coming up on the other side, it's time to get down to the business of the Masters. It is a tradition unlike any other Masters week. We will have our Masters draft plus.
Oh, fun.
Of course, part of that tradition is the champions dinner. And whoever wins gets to select what's on the menu the following year. So we're going to kind of give what we would select if we ended up slipping on a green jacket one day.
Will there be cake?
Yeah, probably. Stay with us. The Nod Pod continues. Welcome back. You are looking at the 13th green here at Amen Corner. It's Masters Week.
It's going to be odd without Nats.
Is he? He's not on the call this year.
Is he?
I don't know. Well, I know he was. I know he was done with the NCAA tournament.
Did I just fire him?
I don't know. Brian, is Jim Nantz not doing the Masters this week? Is it Ian Eagle?
No, it's not. I don't think it's Ian. But okay. I know it's Vern's last Masters.
Oh, that's it.
Okay.
Yeah, let me check. I'll check and I'll get back to you.
All right. Anyway.
Sorry about that.
Yes. Okay. Back to work. Yes. So we are looking forward to the Masters this week, the first major of the year. Past Masters champ, He was a back-to-back champ, in fact. Nick Faldo, recently critical of defending champ John Rahm, because Rahm is he's been winless since jumping to the live. Mm-hmm. By the way, he made a ton of money to go over there, like they all do.
Yeah.
But even Rahm kind of admitted, like, hey, you know, I missed the opportunity to defend the wins I had. He won at Riviera, La Quinta, and then Kapalua last year. And so he didn't get the opportunity to defend those. But now he comes back to Augusta, and he gets to play, and he's going to try to defend it. And so Faldo's like, yeah, I kind of hope he doesn't win. And part of that is, I think he's maybe a little jaded by the live money, but I think it's also because he is one of only three. He said he referred to them as the little club of three that have won back-to-back Masters, and that would be himself, Woods, and Nicklaus. So
pretty good club.
Yeah, not too bad, not too shabby. So
he doesn't want Rahm to join that club.
Yeah, he wants to. Yeah, the guy that he's a traitor, right? No, he didn't call him that. But Faldo also critical of Bubba Watson. But why? Because of Watson's choice of Champions Dinner. So Faldo, he's not one to hold back, right? He shares his opinion. But he was asked about what was the worst Champions Dinner.
Which now is remind what's the Champions Dinner?
It's on the Tuesday before round one. The previous year's winner gets to select a menu, whatever he wants. They have this Champions Dinner, and everybody gathers, and so everybody gets to kind of have your favorite meal, basically. So what was Bubba Watson's meal? Well, Faldo called it a Chuck E. Cheese meal. He said it was a little hamburger with little corn, little ice cream. He said, I think we had a milkshake, too, instead of Chianti. So it was kind of like a kid's dinner, which, I mean, come on. I love Chuck E. Cheese pizza. Very underrated, okay?
Yeah.
But, like, is that what you're going to have at the Masters dinner?
I don't think he really served pizza, though. I think he served cheeseburgers.
Well, that's what he's – I think he just referred to it as a Chuck E. Cheese.
Right.
So let me give you what's on Rahm's menu for the Champions Dinner. So the starter is – and I'm not going to be able to pronounce any of this stuff. It's all – he's a Spaniard, so a lot of this is like Spanish cuisine. But he has six options for tapas, which you know what tapas are, right?
Yeah, it's never enough food. That's what tapas are. It's
exactly.
Never enough.
So there's – one is – one of the six is – acorn-fed Iberian ham cured pork loin.
Ah, I have had Iberian pork. That's
okay.
Amazing.
There is a cheese black truffle.
Okay.
There is a Spanish omelet, onions with confit potatoes.
You lost me at onions.
Spicy Basque chorizo and potato.
Like chorizo.
There's Mama Rahm's classic lental stew. Yeah,
lentil?
That's a hard pass for me there. And then creamy chicken fritters with confit potatoes.
But that sounds good.
So those are just your starters. Your salad, so I think it's like a salad soup, whatever. This is a it's a Basque.
Yeah, the Basque region.
Basque crab salad and potato salad.
All right.
It's called the ensalada de Tesoro. Tawarro.
Very good arch, really.
And then the main dish is it's going to be a choice between a ribeye steak with Tudela lettuce and piquillo peppers. And then there is a rodaballo a pil, a typical fish dish from the Basque region. Sorry. I'm horrible. I'm just butchering it with white asparagus.
Okay.
Anyway, that sounds very elegant.
Some
actually.
Of that sounded good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, hey, you can't go wrong with a ribeye, right?
I like that Iberian
pork.
So
if you could be Masters champ and select a menu for your Champions Dinner, what would be on it?
Well, first of all,
I want Brian in here for this.
Oh, let's get him in. But first of all, can I say what Nick Faldo's last Champions Dinner was?
What was it? He did fish and chips,
fish
right?
and chips. Yeah. I mean, he's making fun of Watson for cheeseburgers, and he's given us the most basic pub fare in the world.
Yeah, that's true.
And mushy peas, Brian. He served him fish and chips and mushy English peas, and he's ripping on Bubba Watson's cheeseburgers. Yeah. So,
what would you have on your menu? Who wants to take it?
I've got one, but after you read his exotic menu there, I feel like mine's going to sound kind of like Bubba Watson's.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Mine would too.
Okay,
yeah.
So my Champions Dinner, which just think about that, Chris Cato winning the Masters, parading around in that green jacket. Appetizer, we're going strawberry pretzel salad. We've discussed this before.
Yeah,
it's not actually a salad. It's like a dessert for an appetizer.
Delicious.
And I call
you don't want that for your actual salad.
No, call it your salad.
Okay.
Whatever you want. Right. And by the way, the theme here is this is Sunday after church. Church picnic.
Nice.
I feel like, as you pointed out with Rahm, he's from Spain, all of these champions dinners have like usually some regionality to them, like a theme of wherever the golfer is from.
Yep.
So, you know, obviously I'm a Southern guy, Alabama, so we're doing Sunday after church picnic. Appetizer, strawberry pretzel salad. Main course, you get your choice of buttermilk fried chicken or Duroc bone-in pork chop with apple glaze.
What is Duroc?
The most tender cut of the pork loin, it's the most tender chop nearest to the loin.
Brian, are you familiar with the Duroc?
Never had
no,
that.
No, and he's from your neck of the woods.
Okay,
so
well,
if it's not, if he doesn't
never
know.
Had strawberry pretzel
you ever heard,
stuff either.
Yeah, right.
Oh, no.
Well, you're missing out. And you've ever heard the expression, eating high on the hog?
Okay. Yes.
Yeah.
Is that what
that's located.
Nice.
It's located high on the hog.
Okay.
Good.
So we're going Duroc bone and pork chop with apple glaze. Sides, you have mashed potatoes and gravy, mac and cheese, green beans with fat back, more pork, fried Brussels sprouts with bacon, more pork, and how about some cornbread? You got to have a cocktail with these things. I think there's usually a specialty cocktail. So we're going to do a spiked Arnold Palmer. That's with the sweet tea vodka.
Okay.
Okay. I'm going to do mine. I prefer my Arnold Palmer not so sweet, so I might use some unsweet tea and lemonade.
Mm-hmm.
Dessert, you'll get your choice of banana pudding.
Hang on. Does Arnold Palmer have to sign off on you using his likeness during the Masters dinner?
Yes.
Because maybe he that might be his drink, and so he's like, dude, you can't steal my – that's –
He lets everyone use it. Yeah. He lets everyone serves that. Although I think Chick-fil-A has to call it something else. Dessert, choice of banana pudding or carrot cake.
Mm.
Yeah, I'm always pushing the carrot cake.
Yeah, you are.
Yeah. So what do you think?
That sounds lovely. I like it. I mean, I first of all, I got to try cookies, pretzel, strawberry salad
at some point.
And I love the you sold me on the high on the hog. And I'll take a little spiked Arnie Palmer.
All right. Not bad, huh? Nothing healthy in there, but that's not why we're here.
That's not what the point of this is. Brian, what did you think of that menu?
Mine is less elaborate than what Cato's was. Growing up in Alabama, we hardly ever had appetizers. Yeah. We'll skip that part.
Boiled chicken breast and a raw potato.
Going barbecue, man. That's what I'm going with.
Yeah.
Pulled pork or pulled chicken, you have your choice. Got to have coleslaw, good coleslaw to go with that. Crinkle cut fries, got to have that.
Those are good.
Baked beans with some maple kind of syrup kind of stuff in it.
Mm-hmm.
Fried okra, that's the only vegetable.
Oh, yuck.
That's
love
a great call.
Fried okra.
Oh, great call. I was about to put that on mine.
I despise fried okra.
Love fried okra.
So good.
Yes. And then dessert, simple. Cheesecake.
Mm.
Okay. All right.
That's my dessert.
Yeah, he's already kind of wading into the next block.
Is it foreshadowing?
He's kind of leading us to know who he voted for.
All right. Well, mine is not themed. I don't have a theme. I just, in fact, it's... It might actually give you an upset stomach if you eat all this stuff. So my starter, I'm big on the apps. I like apps. I'm a big salsa guy. So I want a salsa bar. Okay. And I got to have homemade tortilla chips. So salsa bar, homemade tortilla chips. We got buffalo wings, and we got coconut shrimp.
Oh, that sounds good.
There we go.
I like the coconut shrimp.
Let's just get things warmed up. My salad, it's going to be a Caesar. Okay, we don't need anything too fancy.
Okay.
My main is going to be a New York strip. Everybody gets New York strip. We got creamy cream spinach. I love the Brussels sprouts that have the bacon stuff in it. Like you if you put bacon in any vegetable, I'm good. But bacon and Brussels,
it's
wonderful. Give me some scalloped potatoes with that, and then my dessert will be a giant flan. Like I want the flan to be the biggest flan you've ever seen.
Isn't it flan?
No, this is a flan, a giant flan. I love them things.
He's a fan of the flan.
Yeah. Anyway. What do you think? Yeah?
I love the Brussels sprouts side because, that's good, too.
Okay.
I like all that.
Good.
I like the appetizer bar.
I am stinking starving now.
You should win the Masters so you could put that together.
Yeah.
Of course.
It's
cream spinach, though. No, let's not do the cream
spinach.
Yeah,
man. That's a must at a steakhouse.
Okay.
Have you ever paired your steak with cream spinach?
Have not.
Come on. Okay. Get with it.
I'll try it.
Okay. It is time now for our much-anticipated Masters draft. So what did we decide? Three rounds, four rounds? What are we doing?
Let's do four.
You want to do four rounds? Okay.
Well,
we might need to be a little quick with it. Yeah. We'll go three favorites, and we're going to do a snake draft, and then the last round is dark horse. And our dark horse is based on the betting odds right now. So it has to be someone outside of, I don't even know how to refer to this, plus 10,000?
Right.
Okay. So we all have access to this list, and we'll kind of explain it for the viewer listener as we go along. But we need to decide who goes first because it is a draft overall, and a draft where you draft matters.
It does. That's what I've heard.
We have Director Chris. Hi, Director Chris. There he is. Okay, he has a number. He
Don't
picked a number between 1 and 20. Right? Was that the...
What? That was it.
That's what we said? And then we all have to pick, and whoever's closest goes first, second, third. Got it? Okay. Mm-hmm. Age before beauty. BK, you're on the clock. Wow. What number do you want?
I'll go with my daughter's softball number and her age, 18.
18.
Okay. I'm thinking of what Chris would think of. He's a crooked number guy. I'm going 5.
Okay. Let's see. I got to bridge the gap. I'm going to go.
Don't prices write us.
Well, I don't think it's. We didn't set the rules.
We
should have done that. You
should've.
Can't go over.
Yeah.
Okay, let me go right in the middle. Let me go 11.
11.
All right. Let's reveal it.
Let's see. Ooh.
5.
17.
Oh,
that would be
so now it's
Brian King.
Brian,
yes.
But Brian went over.
So you're last.
I'm last.
But it's a snake draft, so okay. I'm always going to be stuck in the middle. And you guys will rotate. Okay, very good.
Be.
All right, so pull up your list of Masters contestants.
Okay.
I texted it to you this afternoon, so you should have that
it's
handy.
It's been a long time texting this.
Yeah, very long.
A lot of typing.
All right.
Okay.
So,
all right.
With the very first pick in this year's Masters draft, Brian King will select.
I will go with a golfer who's making his 9th Masters appearance. His best finish was back in 2020 when he finished 4th. He's a 2-time major winner. This Sunday, Justin Thomas will be putting on the green jacket.
You only wow. selected him because he's a Crimson Tide boy.
No, nice. I followed him Saturday at Valspar, and it was the worst round.
He hasn't played great in quite a while.
He got it all out of his system, Kato.
You think so? Okay.
Oh, yeah.
He played pretty good at Valspar, though.
Well, not that Saturday. Almost wanted my money back after that.
All right. Okay.
Let's go so faster, though.
Okay.
We're going to go faster.
All right. Hey, easy.
I only want to eat cake.
Okay. Well, I mean, I'm struggling here. I was expecting to go last.
You were going
to
get Justin Thomas, huh?
No. I think with my first pick, I'm going to go Xander Schauffele.
Okay. Just took my second pick. Okay. All right. If you guys are really going to leave me Scotty Scheffler, I'm taking Scotty Scheffler. That's on you. So I'm going Scheffler.
That's fine.
Okay.
Okay. Now
no,
you get to pick again. This is
going to work out well for me.
Yeah.
So I would have gone Scheffler. I'm going to go Hideki Matsuyama. He's been
winning
on fire this year.
And he won, didn't he? Win a couple years ago?
He won in 21. Yeah. Hasn't missed a Masters cut since 2014. Give me Hideki, my second.
Okay. All right. For my second, I am going to go with... Give me Will Zalatoris.
Oh, he always falls apart.
Yeah.
I like those guys.
Okay.
The guy that always is fragile in the mind.
He's knobby knees.
All right.
I will go with, let's go international. I'll go Chile. Give me Joaquin Neiman, live golfer. He's due, man. Number 3, I'll go the guy, you got to have some momentum going into it. The last guy who won a tournament did it without his shoulder almost. His arm came out of his shoulder socket. Give me Akshay Bhatia.
How is the shoulder, though?
Shoulder's good, but the key, he's left-handed. That course is set up for lefties. So you got to have a lefty on your roster here.
I didn't know that.
I like this guy. He's long off the tee. He is a recent – I don't think he's ever – has he ever played at the Masters? I don't know if he's ever played at the Masters. But
is it Wyndham Clark?
He is a major champ. I'm going Wyndham Clark, baby.
This is his first Masters.
Okay. Probably not likely. I don't like any of my picks right now. I regret all of them.
All right. I like Clark. I thought that was a good one. Let's see. I'm going to go I could have anyone. I could have Rory. I could have Koepka. I'm going to go Jordan Spieth. 6 top 4 finishes at Augusta. Give me the Spieth.
Okay. All right, and then you're picking your dark horse.
All right, let's see.
Again, just a reminder for everybody, dark horse has to be below plus 10,000. And there's a lot of good golfers that are still
more of a long shot.
Yeah.
It's a long shot.
By the way, Woods and Mickelson both plus 10,000. So they fall in that if anyone wants to step up. I'm not going to take one of those. My long shot is Duroc Porkchop. High on the hog. He's great with the irons. No, I'm going to go JT Poston. Okay. He's plus 15,000 now, but playing some of the best golf of his career right now. Finished fifth at Kapalua, which has some Augusta-like qualities to it. So, yeah, give me JT Poston.
I'm going to go with a guy. He's got four top 25s already this year. He's got a win this year. I believe he is also competing in his first Masters, if I'm not mistaken, hailing from Germany, Steven Jaeger.
Oh, Jaeger bomb.
Okay. I will go with this guy making his first ever Masters appearance.
Tiger Woods.
No.
Nobody's taking Tiger.
Became the first amateur to win a PGA Tour since Phil Mickelson this January.
Oh.
Give me Nick Dunlap from the University of Alabama.
What are his odds now?
Plus 20,000.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. Nick. So Dunlap for BK. BK right. Loaded with Bama
nice.
Alum.
Okay. There you go. So our teams are set. How do you feel? How do you guys feel about who you drafted?
I'm happy because I never win anything and I won't win this.
You got Justin Thomas, Joaquin Newman, Akshay Bhatia, Nick Dunlap.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Chris came in with the odds-on favorite, Scottie Scheffler. You got Hideki Matsuyama, past champ, Jordan Spieth. Spieth's won, right? He's got a Masters.
Yeah.
And then JT Poston. And then I have Xander Schauffele, Will Zalatoris, the guy that collapses every year, Wyndham Clark, and Steven Jaeger. What are we bidding on this? What's the friendly? Is it just friendly? Or
is it mean? Yeah. Are we shaming one another somehow?
What do you say that the winner gets at least some portion of their champion's dinner next week?
Oh, so I like that.
The winner's dinner. Whoever wins, Cato wins, we get.
It's got, I mean, DuPont obviously there's going to be stuff. Like, we're not going to be able to do
you could
the
do
strawberry
my fried
pretzel.
Chicken. Ooh, was an
yeah,
option.
We could do like some version
yeah.
of it,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, that sounds
We'll try
cool.
to get as close as we can. What did you pick? You picked Taco Bell? What was yours?
Mine was pulled pork.
Pulled pork. Okay,
okay
that's
so you can do that.
Okay.
And
yours
mine's
gonna
be the most is going to be complicated.
I can't. I hope you guys have to pick.
Brad, do you know how to cream spinach? Because I don't.
I'll cream your spinach. All right. Very good. Thanks, BK. We will catch up with you in a little bit. Coming up next, it's the big reveal. We're going to be getting – our special guest is here, Cake. Cake will join us when we come back. The championship is now finished. We will reveal the results coming up on the Nod Pod. We have come to this. This is the final moment where we reveal what is inside that cake, Chris.
I may cry.
I mean, look at this thing. First of all, it is a thing of beauty. This cake, if you are listening to the podcast, you need to watch this episode. And our Cheryl Brisky that works at Fox 13 made this cake. She's a talented cake artist, baker. I don't know what the name is, but this is just, it's our logo. It's the No Off Days logo on the cake. It's a white cake. So it presents, you know,
we don't know
what's
what it is
on the inside. But let me set it up. So this was a tournament that has been going on for weeks now, and we started with 16 cakes, and all of them delicious, and other than fruitcake, all of them in their own right could be on anybody's dessert plate on any given night. But this had to come down to what was the best cake in the entire world. I mean, it was a mighty task.
Yeah, and of course we asked the viewers, the listeners, to vote. You guys were the judges. Now, Scott and I were the seating committee, so we got to seed this
bracket.
And we
got to eat it.
And
we were the beneficiaries of that.
Even though we caught a lot of flack from our coworkers and who we put in this tournament. But you guys at home and in your cars and on your devices, you voted, and you were the ones who really led us to this point where we are now.
Unprecedented voting, too. And you had to engage every week because we would narrow the field, and then you'd have to come back and vote again. And you did that. And so we are very appreciative. It's been the talk of our TV station here. Everybody's excited. They're excited for this moment. Everybody
Ice
wants
Cube
to know.
Was talking. Ice Cube asked us about it last week.
Several people. I feel like there was other guests that weighed in on their favorite cakes. So we finally reached the mountaintop moment. So without further ado, what we're going to do is we're going to cut into this cake and reveal who the winner is. The championship round was between chocolate cake and cheesecake.
Right. Chocolate was a one seed, heavy
favorite.
One
seed, dominant.
Cheesecake was a three seed. Yep. And really went on a magical run. And yeah, everyone's wondering, the very strong following Cheesecake has, could they pull this off?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, they had to get to this point just to get through the final four. I mean, chocolate went against carrot cake, which you have made no bones about. Like, that is,
I wanted carrot in
that's
there.
That's your favorite.
I did.
Yeah, you wanted carrot. On the other side, it was cheesecake
cheese
against
beat coffee and strawberry.
Yes.
I mean, yep, you know, those are both really solid.
Absolutely. So and at the very end, they had to make it through red velvet.
And red velvet.
They did that, and they made it to the championship round. So I believe it's time to unveil the winner.
Do you want the honors? Your name is on the cake.
I think the time has come. I'm sick of talking about it. Now it's time to get into it. Let's cut this cake, my friend.
The knife is yours.
All right. What is on the... This is like a gender reveal party. Here we go.
I can't wait to see if it's chocolate or cheesecake in there.
Okay, here we go.
Let's make
a good
cut.
We're going to do this for the cameras.
Camera needs to see.
You got it?
This is the moment we've been waiting for. Who is the winner of the 2024
It feels
Nod Pod Cake Bracket? He's cutting at an odd angle. He's in there. Now we have to... Would you like this?
Oh, is that what...
There's a little trowel for you. Oh, it's... Chocolate cake is the winner.
We got buttercream frosting on the inside, and this is chocolate cake, baby. Here you go. You want the first slice?
That thing's beautiful. Yes, I do.
It has my name on it, so please take and eat.
I will.
Oh, this is beautiful. So let's give the results here. We got chocolate cake winning 55% of the vote to 45% cheesecake. So
this was probably their closest finish,
right?
I think so, yeah. So,
yeah.
I love the fact, I mean, again, our Cheryl Brisky, one of our favorite coworkers, made this. She's a talented baker, and I love that she kind of disguised the chocolate cake with the icing, which, let me taste it. Who knows what this icing is? This could be the best icing ever.
I'm told it's buttercream.
Can I eat now?
Sorry.
I'm going to eat now. Okay.
All right, so
you're
cutting.
Okay.
This is it's a beautiful cake. Yeah?
Mmm.
Oh my goodness,
is it ever buttercream? Oh, wow.
Championship.
You know, I got to say.
Championship level. Hey, I need a fork, buddy. I need a fork.
Yeah, here you go.
Okay.
We had championship level baking here. Cheryl Brisky is so talented. Knocked it out of the park. You know, we had that other chocolate cake on last week. This is like five times better than that.
Really?
Yeah.
Here we go. Is she selling her cakes? How can people get a hold of
She told me not to advertise.
Too late. Yeah.
She's very talented, though.
Oh. Mm.
What do you think?
I mean, can we just get one shining moment playing in the background right now?
Is this championship worthy? I think it is.
Ba, 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 ba.
This cake gets to cut down the net.
Mm. I mean, chocolate cake. It ran the table. It mirrored the success of UConn.
It did. It dominated.
Although, you know, I think cheesecake gave a better finals performance in Purdue, probably. Yeah,
there was no Zach Edey on cheesecake.
This is dynamite.
You know, yes, and this is eye-opening to have the buttercream frosting on the chocolate cake. Like, that's, I love that twist she put on it.
You know, one of the things we said off the top, though, was it doesn't matter what kind of, like, we did chocolate on chocolate,
right?
Or if you wanted the yellow cake with the chocolate frosting, it's all considered
chocolate. We all know what chocolate is, yeah.
But this is something I wasn't even anticipating. This is chocolate cake with a white buttercream frosting. Still chocolate cake and delicious.
But a better chocolate cake.
This is so good. Yeah. Oh, all right. Well, I don't know. What do we do now?
I think this was a success.
Is there a way to get more cake next week?
We're going to be so sad next week when we're not eating cake.
All right.
But again, as we've said, it's getting into beach season here, so we probably do need to calm down on the cake eating a little.
Well, it's a beautiful cake. It was a fun tournament. I'm glad you guys all participated with us, and you selected the cake champion of the world, and that would be chocolate cake, as we kind of predicted off the top. So congrats to our winner. Much thanks to everybody that's joined us on this journey.
Mm-hmm.
To those that baked themselves, one Haley Hines and, of course, Cheryl Brisky, very talented, making delicious cakes. It tastes better to eat it in a slice than when it's smashed in your neck and up your nostrils. So that's always preferred. But it's been fun, and so I'm glad we got to do another bracket, and we'll have to start taking ideas for next year. I know people have already started throwing stuff out, what we should do next year for the bracket challenge, but
maybe something that is better for our health. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, best salads.
Yeah. Now let's just
if you get a strawberry.
Let's do cookies next year.
Okay. Sold. Very good. Much thanks to our NodPod crew this week. We got Chris. We got Sean on the jib. We got BK in the booth. We got Chris. I'm Scott. Until the next time we are on, there are no off days.
That is so good.
The cake is baked.